really all of the kind of central things you could say we're looking for as humans, a sense of more openness, presence, ease, freedom, harmony, love, or relaxation. All of these things turn out to be already here as the very basis of this ever-present presence. This is the well-being that's unconditioned. You could call it the ultimate medicine, discovering that no medicine is required. We have this opportunity, if we're curious, to like encounter what is actually present. The description is trying to convey something about what's present. Now let's look and see what's actually there. Feeling into the boundlessness of it, you don't find something that can be determined. You have infinite indescribability at the basis of every single thing that's encountered. This is where the other well-being is found, and this is the well-being that's unconditioned. In other words, it's present, as equally present in sadness as it is in joy, found in this well of being, the beingness of what's here, which is ultimately infinite and indescribable and inconceivable. Encountering that infinite, bottomless nature of even the difficult human experiences, exploring their boundless indescribability, even those states we thought of as being the absence of well-being, are themselves infinitely rich, nourishing, full, and complete, and astonishingly miraculous, and enlivening and empowering. The very thing I thought was the absence of well-being from one perspective turns out to be the deepest well-being, the most profound well-being that's never absent. The sadness is here just as much as the joy is here. They share that radical, unmistakable force of beingness, the sheer presence of what's here. When you investigate whatever it is that seems to be present, you come up with infinity. You come up with the unfathomable nature of it, the natural perfection of everything as it is. We don't have to correct our experiences because their very appearance is the miracle that we're searching for. Your very existence is made of pure perfection and pure divinity and pure radiance. And you've never been apart from it because you are it. And so is everything else. And that's the great good news. That's the great relief, the great freedom of seeing that this is it, always.
You're listening to the Non-Duality Podcast. This is Nick Higham from NisargaYoga.com. In this episode, Paul Dobson speaks with John Astin.
We're typically trying to improve what's here. And what I'm talking about is let's examine what's here. Let's investigate what is the dream, what is life, rather than immediately jumping to, I want to have a better dream, a better life. It's like, maybe that better dream and the better life that I'm looking for, contrary to how I've been trained to imagine, I'm going to find it by rearranging my experiences in such a way, manipulating, controlling, regulating them in such a way so as to have a better dream. It's like maybe the well-being is found in the very fact of dreaming itself. The very fact that the moment is here and appearing is the well-being that doesn't come and go. Because it's always coming and going, as I was saying. But the creation of the moment, the emanation, the upwelling of the moment is always, it's always here. That doesn't come and go.
It's the power of life itself, the life-giving source of everything.
Yeah, it's the fact that something's here. And it's really powerful to just, when I have these little meditations that I invite people into where it's, I call them experiential inquiries, where you're just noticing sort of things about experience that are often overlooked, essentially taken for granted or just completely not even recognized, maybe just because we're attending, we're so focused on, we're so focused on what's on the screen, what's the story that's being told, and how am I doing in relationship to that story, that we're overlooking the fact that wow, there even is a movie. You can just feel like if you're just sitting here and anyone that's listening, there's this constant flow of experience occurring. It's undeniable. And at the basis of the experience, we could say, no matter what thoughts are appearing or feelings or sensations, at the basis of each of those things that we're describing in those ways is just the sheer presence of them. So feel the way, you can just feel the way in which what's here is this flow, this ceaseless flow of presence. It's just this constant, ever, it's in this sort of state of constant opening, constant becoming, seemingly constant. You know, like those time-lapse photographs of flowers just opening. It's like the moment is like that. It's like, wow, and it could be described and is described in all these different ways. Moments that moods described in this way, flavors described in this way, but all of it is just this flow of presence that's constantly here. It's never absent. So the whole notion that we have, sort of say, spiritual seekers have of like getting into presence or possibly being removed from presence, which is why we would want to try to get into it in the first place, it's an innocent misunderstanding. The presence is here as this very shining forth of the moment. This is presence. And it's never absent, is it?
It is innocent, isn't it? I mean, because I can definitely relate to the constant thinking that presence should look a certain way in my own experience of seeking for however many years. And looking back, it was all very innocent. In a way, it's not a mistake or anything wrong with it. But that presence was, as we said before, presence was just kind of sitting there. The proper presence, the presence that doesn't come and go, not this idea of presence. It's just sitting there waiting to be appreciated. while I wanted it to look a certain way, you know, a certain idea. And the funny thing is, when you trace the idea to what it is you're looking for, it's usually come from someone else's description or something you've seen or something. Just that isn't it. It's always a description of some kind. And you're like, well, it's not it unless it's like that description. And it gets... what's funny about it is how subtle that gets. Is like this really, really subtle description of it, and it's still not, you know.
Yeah. No, it's subtle. It's so subtle as to ultimately be not capturable by any ideas, right, that we might have about it. What's so extraordinary is that really all of the kind of central things you could say we're looking for as humans. A sense of more openness, a sense of more presence, a sense of more ease, a sense of more freedom, a sense of more harmony, a sense of more love, a sense of more relaxation. All of these things turn out to be already here as the very basis of this ever-present presence. So this constancy, it's not even merely that, it's not even just that this is always here. Reality is always here. The presence is always here, even though it always looks different. But if one explores, and I'm always inviting folks to explore what's here, because it's what's here. This is what is to explore, is what's here, of course. And it's amazing to explore it. And endlessly enriching to explore it. But what can be discovered is that something is present and it's always present. And whatever is present is known. So this whole idea of trying to cultivate more awareness is like going out into a field with this bright sun shining overhead. Brilliant, bright sun illuminating the whole field, and going out, trying to become more aware is like going out into the field and lighting a match to try to bring more illumination to the moment. The presence of the moment is pure illumination. The moment is illuminated. The presence it's inseparable from illumination. It's inseparable from consciousness, from awareness, we could say. And so this moment is already awake. So its nature, the very nature of this ever-present presence is wakefulness. It's awake without our having to do anything to make it awake.
It's just the idea, isn't it, that it should look a certain way, which seems to be the only problem if we have one, that it just should look a certain way. It should feel a certain way. It should have just the right qualities to it, rather than the fact it is, like we've kept saying, just coming back to it, the fact that it's appearing. And just the interesting thing about wanting it to look a certain way is it creates the tension all by itself. It creates a tension of this isn't it, and therefore it diminishes how you're feeling in this moment, because it's not enough suddenly. Instead of this fullness that's always here, we managed to diminish it into this not enoughness.
Right. A moment is appearing, and let's say consciousness is describing it as it feels insufficient somehow. It feels lacking, or it seems to be incomplete. Okay, that's an attempt to define something that's showing up experientially. But we have this opportunity, if we're curious, to like encounter what is actually present that I imagine I'm describing. In other words, the description is trying to convey something about what's present. Now let's look and see what's actually there. So here's like an example for what I'm talking about, like how I play with this stuff. So I'm sitting in the tub one evening and I'm remembering something that occurred in a relationship. And then there was suddenly this sense of this kind of sadness that just entered my system, an experience that I would describe as sadness. Typically, we would think when that first approach to well-being, like that happiness is gone, sadness is there. Well-being is gone, sadness is there. But because I just am the way I am, I was like, well, what is this that's here? Let me look at the other side of the coin. I've got the definition down. I know that it's sadness. It's instantly recognizable, which is amazing. It's like pattern recognition. What is it? I'm recognizing some familiar pattern that I'm labeling sadness, very familiar to me, in the same way any other flavor might be. But what is it actually? What's actually there? So then there was just very organic kind of exploration of what is sadness? What's actually there? And immediately there was this sense of just immersion in this absolute mysterious universe of, I don't even know. I can't even say. It's like little flickerings of energy and little experiential particles that aren't really particles, but what any state of mind or emotional state or mental state or any state is made of is not it's not conceivable what it's made of ultimately. And exploring that, the infinity of that seemingly finite thing I described as sadness, feeling into the boundlessness of it, the fact that whatever you look at, you just keep seeing more and 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 more. It's like you'd never come to the end of it. And then any little part of it that seems to make up that state, you look at that little part and it's the same thing. It's just this fractal, you know, it's never ending. You just find more and more and more detail, more and more and more depth, more and more subtlety. And it's like, well, am I experiencing sadness from one side of the coin? Just sadness. I know what that is. It's not that great a feeling. And then on the other side of the coin, I'm experiencing infinity. Like boundless, ungraspable, unthinkably vital, shining infinity. That's a very different way of encountering this ordinary state that I typically equate with a lack of well-being. And what's fascinating, Paul, is that, and so liberating to discover, is that whatever experience you look at in that kind of a way that I was talking about in the bathtub, you find the same thing. You find ungraspable indescribability. You don't find something that can be determined. This is what it is. You just don't get to what it is because it's endless. You never arrive at the bottom of what it is. I finally arrived at my explanation for what the essence of sadness is. You never get to the essence. Just keep finding more and more. It's essenceless in a sense.
Incredible, isn't it? That it can be like that. It's going in the opposite direction to what is natural. You go, sadness, okay, where's something to alleviate the sadness quickly, you know? But what is the sadness? Like, it's infinity. It's unnameable. It's ineffable. It's just wow. And sadness is kind of irrelevant, you know? The fact this feeling's there is irrelevant. But that's not just like you've done something special to make that happen. That's available to anyone that just is willing to investigate, honestly, absolutely immediately investigate their direct experience of anything at all. If you investigate it deep enough, and suddenly your whole life becomes about, well, it's just like, what can I find here in the most unlikely place, thrown into the middle of infinity with any experience?
When you discover in that boundless, infinite nature of every experience, regardless of its conventional description, you discover yet another, you could say, common element in all experience, which is that it's pure, boundless infinity. And this discovery cuts through the standard conventional reality hierarchies that we have about this is better than that. This is, we were talking about this earlier. This is more positive. This is well-being. That's not well-being. You know, the this and the that, the way we make these distinctions at the describable, seemingly describable side of the coin of experience. But on this other side of the coin, you have infinite indescribability at the basis of every single thing that's encountered. And what's so powerful from the standpoint of our search, our human search for being at home, for feeling well-being, is that this is where the other well-being is found. And this is the well-being that's unconditioned. In other words, it's present as equally present in sadness as it is in joy. And it's the well-being that's found in this well of being, the beingness of what's here, which is ultimately infinite and indescribable and inconceivable. So I'll come back just briefly to the story. There I am in the tub, and it's like feeling the two sides of the coin. It's like these two perspectives that I can, in a sense, embody and encounter. The one side of the coin is like sadness. I feel the flavor of that. I know that flavor. And in a way, it's okay. So yeah, it's sadness. There's tears. And then without any denial or pushing away or need to reject that side of the coin, which is silly to do because it's reality as much as anything else. Why would we reject any of it? But there, it's got this other, you could say, dimension to it. It's more primal, whatever, ultimately inexplicable dimension, the non-narrative side of the coin. And in that non-narrative side of the coin, it's like, it's rich. And it's, I'm going to throw words at something that has no words, but there's like something about encountering that infinite, bottomless nature of even the difficult human experiences. Exploring their boundless indescribability, you encounter something quite stunning, which is that even those states we thought of as being the absence of well-being are themselves infinitely rich, infinitely nourishing, infinitely full and complete and astonishingly miraculous and enlivening and empowering. The very thing I thought was the absence of well-being from one perspective turns out to be the deepest well-being, the most profound well-being that's never absent. And that's the, again, that's the equalness that the Tibetans talk about of all experiences. Another way to understand it is one thing we could say is sheer presence, we were talking about earlier, is what's equal about all experience, regardless of its label, but also its indescribability. Because this presence, unmistakable presence of what's here, if we investigate the presence of what's here, we always arrive back at this unknowability of it, even though it's here. We can't quite say what it is, but we can't deny that it's here, the sheer presence of what's here. The sadness is here just as much as the joy is here. They share that radical, unmistakable force of beingness. And yet when you investigate whatever it is that seems to be present, you come up with infinity. You come up with the unfathomable nature of it. But the felt sense of that is somehow, you were talking about the typical approach we would have based on only orienting or primarily orienting to the described side of the coin is that we're going to seek out remedies because it seems like it's a problem that I need to fix. So I'm going to look for some cure for it, some medicine to fix the problem. Oh, fine. Again, from that perspective, it's like you have a headache and you seek out a remedy for it. You might drink some more water, get some exercise, take an aspirin, get a massage. And all of these are fine ways of trying to address the described side of the coin. I call that, I wrote a piece many years ago called Ultimate and Relative Medicine. And that's the relative medicine is I'm going to take steps to address the description at the level of the description. More describable things, the remedies. No problem with that. But then there's this other medicine. You could call it the ultimate medicine. And the ultimate medicine is discovering that no medicine is required. That's the ultimate medicine. Because what we imagine to be a problem that needs to be fixed experientially, correct our experience somehow, because there's something not right about it, turns out to be another innocent misunderstanding that, yeah, certainly from one perspective, we could say that's true, fair enough. But then there's this other perspective that we have the potential to access and discover. And this other perspective reveals, you could say that, again, as the Tibetans say, the great perfection, the natural perfection of everything as it is, which is not found in the descriptions because the descriptions suggest that there's perfect and imperfect. It's one of the problems with the word perfection is we think of it in terms of its opposite, which is imperfection. But the great perfection has no opposite. It's the perfection that transcends the usual distinctions we make of positive and negative, good and bad. It's transcendental. It's beyond the dualities, beyond the dichotomies. But it's perfect in its presence. It's perfect in its shining, in its radiating, in its inconceivable infinite nature. And that can be discovered by exploring what's here outside of the context of what we think it is. Because when we're only orienting to what we think it is, then we're caught in that game, seemingly caught in the game of now I have it, now I don't have it. Now I have well-being, now I don't have it. Now I have presence, now I don't have it. Now I have God and enlightenment. Oh, I lost it. I got to get it back. I have to go on another retreat, do more meditation. You can't, it's not losable. It's not, in other words, it's uncaused, it's unconditioned by circumstances and experiences. Why? Because it is all circumstances and all experiences. So of course it's oceans not conditioned by the waves that are appearing because the waves are its expression. What if the ocean's real calm and placid? It's not better than if it's storming. It's just different. It's still the ocean. Presence is not more presence or better when it's calm and placid and everything is restful and chill and tranquil. It's still presence if it's tumultuous and agitated. It's all presence. The presence of what is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete flipping upside down of everything we thought, isn't it, as humans? When we're babies, we don't know that we have no idea. We just have no idea and we're loving it. But then at some point, we think we know what's going on. Everyone else knows what's going on. And then we learn more and more and think, oh, yeah, no, I know what. Everyone else seems to know what's going on. So therefore, I know what's going on because you don't want to not fit in, do you? And then at some point, you realize nobody has a clue. There's no reference point. It's all made up out of thin air.
Well, and also one of the things about our definitions of things that seem we imagine are capturing what's here is that they're often, maybe most of the time, diminishing what's here, leading us to believe that we believe that this is small and finite and we're these limited creatures and we're stuck in a world and that we're potentially the victims of and overwhelmed by, or at least at risk of being overwhelmed by or victimized by this giant world that we imagine ourselves being in. And then there's all these limitations about the self and who we are and that we have to fix and correct, and all the ways that we talk to ourselves about our inadequacies. It's just this, the ways in which we're defining what's here is often very oppressive in a certain way, and gives rise to the sense of lack and limitation and problem. And again, to circle back to this quest for well-being, it's like the definitions are often suggesting that this is not enough, that this is lacking. That's sort of almost the root of the search. The genesis of the search is there's something missing here. And I'm going to go find it. Whether in a conventional sense, it's just happiness and well-being, or in a spiritual sense, it's God and enlightenment. There's still that itch. The itch is there's something not quite right here. Something's missing. And then, but inquiry can reveal that's based on a misunderstanding arising out of how it's being defined. That this is unlimited and missing absolutely nothing, but it is the most unthinkable fullness and effulgence and luminosity and brilliance. And that's what's actually going on here. So there's that moment, you know, just at your desk doing your same old, your boring life, or your unfulfilling life. And it's like, that's, again, not actually the whole story, not even close to the whole story of what's actually present. What's actually present is the absolute, miraculous shining forth of God. That's what's actually here, no matter how we are describing it, no matter what we actually believe is here based on our conceptualized notions of things. It's not what's actually here. And that can be discovered by looking at what's here, actually investigating it, and not assuming that we know what it is. That's the trick. Don't assume that you know what it is because you have words and labels to seemingly capture it. Check it out. Can you capture it? Because it will show you that it's not capturable, that it's it won't be held in any of our boxes, because it's, the boxes are finite and it's not finite. This is not finite. And that's the freedom that is present in the freedom from all the designations and descriptions. That is present in every single seemingly describable moment. That freedom is intrinsic to the moment. It is free of all of its characterizations. It transcends all of its descriptions. We don't have to create that transcendence. We can just allow it to, in a sense, reveal itself to us simply by exploring it and feeling what's here, because the feeling of this moment is, it's non-narrative. In the feeling of this moment, there's no narration, actually, which is amazing. There's no narration here in the feeling of the moment. None that I can find. If I found someone, it would just be throwing some concept onto something that is not conceivable. It could sound even the way we're talking today about all this, that somehow they're the great problem that has to be done away with, get rid of the concepts and the interpretations. But when we go one step further, so to speak, and then explore what the concepts and the interpretations that we could say or one might believe are the problem, and you investigate what those are, investigate what a thought is. What is thought made of? Thought is made of, just like the sadness in the bathtub story, thought is made of infinity. And so it's made of, it's not a problem, actually. It's also the shining forth of the radiant nature of reality. And so it's that standpoint, this perspective is the perspective that there are no problems. There's nothing missing. There's nothing lacking. There's just this ever-present effulgence that shines forth as everything and anything, and can look like anything and everything, and does look like anything and everything, because it's inclusive of all of this, because it is all of this. This is all its display. From that perspective, there's no need to correct your experience and make it better, to alter it and change it in order to find one being, because the very shining of the experience, the flow of your experience, is the display of the ground. It is the display of divinity. And so why? There's no need to correct it. You don't have to correct a wave in order for to find the ocean. The wave is its expression. So it's just like that with our experience. It's like we don't have to correct our experiences because their very appearance is the miracle that we're searching for. It's all God. It's all the one thing. And then it seems to split itself off and leave itself and somehow lose itself. And then it goes on a journey to recapture itself and return to itself and find itself. But all along, it's like the wave trying to find the ocean. The wave never parted from the sea. It is the sea. Your very existence is made of pure perfection and pure divinity and pure radiance. And you've never been apart from it because you are it. And so is everything else. And that's the great good news. That's the great relief, the great freedom of seeing that this is it, always. In all the forms it can take, in all the forms it can take, it's still it. It's still it.